Good morning, good Saturday morning indeed. You're very welcome along to the weekend edition here on Highland Radio with me, Greg Hughes. Hope we find you very well indeed. Coming up on the programme, Vincent Brown takes his people's debate to Donegal this month. He'll join us later on the programme to discuss what he hopes to achieve. 55% of companies in the county hope to hire new staff this year. That's according to a new survey, which we'll have the details of. Dermot Ling, former Wexford hurler, wants people to give Facebook a break for February, particularly younger people. He'll tell us why. We've live in-studio performances from Ronan Friel and Maria Cormack. That's going to be very interesting indeed. And we discuss the Cathedral Quarter project in Letterkenny. Public input indeed now being sought. Text the programme 086 77 00 555. Call us on 074 91 25 342 or tweet me at Greg Hughes 2. So hopefully you can stay with us between now and 12 o'clock for the first portion of the programme. We're just joined in studio by community activist Christy Galligan to have a look at the news. Christy, a very good morning to you.
Good
Welcome
morning,
back to the
Greg.
Programme.
Thank you very much.
How are you?
I'm not too bad.
Superb, superb. Is there a great diversity in the papers today, or
there
what
is,
are we focusing on?
Well, there is in a number of the newspapers, and one of them, the Irish Times, has leeway on Greek debt ahead of election. This is a story that's ongoing with a new... shows European leaders have held out the prospect of further restructuring of Greece's debts, as polls indicated that the left-wing party, which wants to repudiate Greek loans, will take power tomorrow. One last-minute poll published yesterday put Syriza, 33.4%, and ahead of the Prime Minister Antonis Samaras' Conservative New Democracy Party. Now, this is really a write-down of Greek debts. We're looking for a write-down again for the third time of Greek debts, you know, and other European countries like Ireland will be looking at that very closely.
Well, I think Ireland, and we should be looking very closely at the outcome of that election, because I'd be of the opinion that it's very much going to influence our general election, because if, and it looks very much like it, an anti-austerity group is running that country, well, we'll be able to see over the course of the next year how successful that actually is, and who's to say or who's not to say that people won't vote here based on that, because the proof of the pudding will be in the eating.
Well, you see, the problem for the Greeks are is that if they fail to honour existing agreements with the EU in relation to write-down and matters that they have to be put in place, that they may not get another further write-down. Mm. It's all into the EU and their officials. And
but they just default.
And what they'll default, and there's a knock-on effect. For
but the EU needs Greece more than Greece needs the EU.
Yes, the last thing they want is... as Greece or any country leaving the EU, because it'll be seen as a failure for the European market, really, at the end of the day. And with the good news of $1 trillion being really as part of the quantitative easing this week into the banks.
Quantitative easing, sorry.
I
learned that during the week.
Quantitative easing. It's, you know, to revive the Eurozone and just basically to ward off deflation by making credit more widely for the banks, so that we can stimulate growth and the banks then can lend to small and medium businesses. Something that we really need in this country anyway. And this is going to help Ireland, because Ireland will be a beneficiary of $500 million.
Now, but there's nothing to suggest the banks, and let's face it, it's clear we can't compel them to do anything.
No.
They still decide who gets that money. If there is money freed up to lend, do they, you know, start giving it to people to buy holiday homes again? Or
this is the concern. You know, when you see house prices rising again 3%, but the big problem for the house prices and people trying to buy houses is what the central bank have put in place, which is a 20%, that you have 20%.
What's your feelings on that?
I think the 20% is a bit harsh in relation to mortgage, because it's very hard for people who are trying to save nowadays to save for a house, even in Dublin or anywhere else for that matter.
But if you don't have the wherewithal to save €20,000, should you be allowed to buy a house worth €200,000 in the first
place? Well, we're going back then to where we were, where the boom to bust happened, really, originally.
But that's the difficulty.
For it. But by the same time, if you want to stimulate an economy and get money out from where people are trying to save, rather than having people constantly saving, you want that money circulating within the economy itself. And as part of that including the quantitative easing, as we talked about, I think it's very important, and to stimulate growth and to get jobs going up and going again, we have to see, I think the central bank really will have to reduce that down to 13 or 14% to make it more palatable for people, make it easier for people in the long run at the end of the day. Look, we have a diversity of young people and great things in this country.
Yeah, but we also have an obsession with owning property.
We have.
If you go to other European countries, that obsession is not there. People are perfectly happy to rent. So, you know.
And in the recent commission and the recent plan commissions there, where the European, the study done by the Europeans is that we have this obsession, certainly with owning our own property. And this goes back, I suppose, centuries, you know, where people were evicted and people needed their own property, and we had the our own state, and everybody wanted a little bit of land. We all want to own a little bit of our own country, as we say. And that obsession became a reality in the 1990s and 2000s, where people thought, well, look, we can go to a bank now and get 100% of the mortgage loan and see what happens.
Well, there's more than 100% at some time.
And sometimes 110%. Yeah. Really, it was crazy.
It's a balancing act, and it's a decision I wouldn't like to have to make, because you don't want to. You don't want to push. You don't want to necessarily flood the market with cash buyers, because that can have an impact on rents in certain places. So, it's a balancing act. And,
so it's a big balancing act. And then you look at NAMA, which was primarily set up to relate in relation to bank debt and buying bank debt in relation to builders and others as well. And we look at that, and we see that they have sold a vast amount of debt to foreign investors, you know, these investors in abroad, in America and other places. And my biggest fear is, what's going to happen then when they start offloading all of that back into the Irish economy? You know, when they start to say to sell it off, they want to make a profit, and they want to sell it off. How will that affect our economy? There are so many variables out there of what can happen down the road, that we have to think further down than in the short term. I think we think far too much in the short term. We should be thinking in the long term.
Yeah, but how can you think in the long term when you have governments that their life cycle's 5 years?
Well,
because we have the current government making commitments as it relates to building houses by 2020 and reducing deficits by certain amounts, far beyond where they're likely to be in power, if the truth be told. No offence to any Fine Gael Labour listeners.
No.
But that's, you know, that seems to be the reality. But a year's a long time in everything, well, and particularly
years long,
politics.
A year's so a long time in politics, absolutely. And I think one of the other things is, when we look at what's happening in relation to, and we go back to this famous one, Irish water, which is becoming a real thorn in the side for everyone. And no matter, not just just the protesters.
This is something you supported.
Well, it's something that I personally believe that we should pay for utilities.
But we're paying for it already.
We're paying for it through indirect or direct taxation. But if you look at how they pay abroad, and I had a piece out of the paper yesterday, our concerns over water charge reductions. Water charges for two adults and two children. Ireland, we're going to have it at 160.
But we're already paying for it.
All right. But Berlin, they're paying direct and indirect taxation, but they pay 644. Helsinki pay 493. I mean, they pay direct.
But you have to compare like with like. You have to have similar incomes. You have to have similar expenditure in the government. I mean, you're comparing apples
but
and oranges.
I know, but you're comparing charges at the same time and just up the road, where people pay charges.
But look at the services they get for that. Their bins are included.
Absolutely.
They can go to the local community centre.
And that was one of the mistakes.
The roads are clear. If your dog's barking, if a dog's annoying you next door, you can phone the council and they'll come out and sort it out for you. If you're getting a... I think a lot of people, if there were rates that you were paying and you had
getting the service charge. Yes, absolutely.
But it's difficult to make an argument for a utility charge when you are already paying for it. And look, is it 300 million, 400 million from car tax went straight into Irish water this year alone, and there's provision for it again next year. So the indirect taxation, as you call it, is still ongoing.
And it's a big bugbear for a lot of people. And I think the whole setup in relation to Irish water was probably wrong. And we have to agree that it was wrong. It really has become a monolith now. What do you do with it? And even Piers Doherty, I think, as Sinn Féin suggested, I mean, we have this utility.
Well, what
it's
you do said, is
it's
you,
been
you,
an investment. You, what you do could, you do with it?
You could, well, what do you do with it now?
What do you do with it now?
I mean,
after
you
all
do
the
what
money
you do with
been
the,
spent
probably a lot of people want it to do with what you do with the voting machines and put them in storage in Carrick and Shannon,
and somebody can benefit from it at the end of the day. But really, that's where we're at. We have this utility. What are we going to do with it? There's over nearly, you know, talking about nearly a billion, you know, over a half a billion invested in it, and here we are. We're talking about infrastructure where the money could have been invested in major
half a billion's nothing, though, in the wider scale of things.
But not with when
I know that sounds like a ridiculous thing to say, but I mean, given the amount we're borrowing still, what is it, 30 billion a month or something? Yeah. I mean, it's half of 30 million or billion.
But see, well, and funny enough, the government turned around this weekend will say, well, you know, with quantitative easing. That we got, we'll benefit by 500 million, which seems a lot of money, but at the same time, it probably isn't. Mm. And 500 million goes into a deep black hole like everything else.
Well, the big thing with Irish Water is going to be the sign-ups, and if the utility will pass the EU tests. Fianna Fáil predicting that if we don't, it's the death knell of the government, a mini-budget and cocking this up further, some would argue that that'll be the end of it.
Well, I think, you know, if it doesn't pass that market, you know, I think that market test that it needs to pass, then where do they go from there? And if they then backtrack and say, right, we can't subsidise the Irish people to the tune of 160-odd million or 100 million.
100 per house, effectively.
100 per house, basically. Then what happens then? Mm. Do we go back to the original charges? And that means that we're going to be similar to maybe other European countries in charging for water. You know, and that's where we're at the present moment.
You're welcome back. Don't forget still to come on the programme. We'll be discussing the Cathedral Quarter Project in Letterkenny and hearing live music from Maria Cormack. There's also a live performance from Ronan Friel. Vincent Brown will join us after 11 to discuss the people's debate hitting Donegal. And some good news, hopefully, 55% of companies in the county hope to hire new staff this year off the back of a successful Christmas for most. But for now, it's Christy Galligan in studio, who's been described as a typical civil servant, public servant, by one of our texters, who points out that they'll not let an Irish Water fit their house with a meter. Keep your texts coming in to 086 77 00 555 or call us on 07 491 25000. Christy?
I'm a former public servant, not a civil servant. There's a slight difference.
I think really what is a public servant, but you're sort of saying it's in your blood now, isn't it?
It's in my blood.
What's next?
Well, one of the things here in the Irish Independent is the senior Gardaí broke rules and penalty points, and this has become a big one. It was in relation to the report that was released yesterday, and it was talked about very comprehensively in relation to the whistleblower. And this is where, you know, each year there's approximately 450,000 penalty points issued.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a lot. Now, and the study really looked at, professional standards unions along with Morris McCabe study looked at 16,000 between 2013 and 2014. Out of that, they had 660 which needed further investigation. And out of that, then, they had 9 incidents.
Mm.
You know, 3.4% or something. That was a very small amount out of the total, out of the totality.
And
legal procedure, and mostly that was down to procedures.
Yeah,
you know, and some of the superintendents now have, and inspectors have retired. So end of story. Most of that, and some of them went against the commissioner's, even Commissioner Callan's directives in relation to the penalty point system.
And
that was wrong as well.
Because what they were being quashed. Now, someone put on false plates on a car and drove through a speed camera in Dublin, and it was my registration. Right.
Oh yes.
Okay. I had to phone up and email and prove it wasn't mine, and my points were quashed.
Yeah.
Was I in that list? Not me specifically, are those the type of cases we're talking?
They were talking about those type of cases were probably looked at, and but they were talking mostly about procedural,
right,
and technical issues, not something that was. They were only talking about 9 incidents where superintendents quashed penalty points outside their local jurisdictions, and their local districts, but and the other ones, which I was making notes of it yesterday. There was very small amounts where there was tactical procedures, even where the penalty point system, the main hub in Thurles and County Tipperary, they even were making mistakes themselves after the commissioner's directives as well.
But the commissioner's made it very clear yesterday that this is not going to be tolerated.
This is not the one problem, and maybe the one problem we see that with the PC thing and the political correctness gone mad is, where you had a certain amount of autonomy, or superintendents had a certain amount of autonomy, like sergeants in charge of districts may have had a certain amount of autonomy about saying, right, you know, that because of community relations, that if, you know, there are people who are going out every day, and you were talking about direct and indirect taxation, it's another penalty on people. All right, it's breaking the law. Yes, and we shouldn't say that we can't tolerate breaking the law. But by the same token, should there not be some sort of leeway given to that there is discretionary power still?
But the problem is that autonomy, that discretionary power that was there, was abused.
And was abused by
where you have a little bit of leeway, if some people are abusing it, well, then you have to get rid of it.
Six superintendents out of 141 superintendents who kind of that abused who quashed penalty points for whatever reason they did, and that was incorrect. But by the same token, when you take away that autonomy, when you take away that principle whereby you say to somebody, right, look it, you don't do that again, or else you won't feel the full wrath of the law. When you take away that little principle, I always say the discretionary principle that we had, if you take that away from a frontline service member like the Garda Síochána, then where are you with community?
With all due respect, Christy.
And I have been there.
But you look at it with rose-tinted glasses here as a former guard. You are. Because if Gardaí have that level of discretion to act in the lovely positive manner that you suggest, they also have that discretion perhaps to persecute certain people or to target them or to make their lives very difficult.
I don't think any guard will go out intentionally to persecute or prosecute anybody. I think they go out to do their job every day.
And I'm not suggesting otherwise, but have we not had tribunals that proved otherwise?
Well, you're talking about a very small number of members.
Well, they didn't exist about 15 seconds ago.
Well, they did. No. I mean, I'm talking about, I mean, I've read out the statistics for you, that there were six superintendents. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, out of 141, we're talking about a very small percentage overall in relation to the penalty point system, like 660, and out of that, 9 instances.
Yes, but the point I'm saying is, and what I was trying to broaden it out to is when you do have that discretion, which I am not saying
is a
good or
abused.
Bad thing.
Absolutely. I agree with you. It could be abused, and it probably was abused by a very small number. But at the same time, there is that discretion where you want to enhance within the community where you're working in, that you have something that you work with the community and you need the community. Because we remember, the Gardaí are no good without the community at the end of the day.
Right, I can't believe how quickly time is moving. Yeah. So what's next, Christy?
Well, actually, as one last night, I'm sure this won't help any Man United fans.
Well, this is Cambridge.
Oh, this is Cambridge.
They proved they're not just good rowers.
I couldn't believe it. I watched the match last night and I was speaking to a very avid Man United fan afterwards, and some of the words he used I won't repeat.
I can imagine they were quite expletives.
He was not a happy camper. And to think that some of these unpaid footballers, these people who are on free transfers and just happen to be playing a game of football.
And this is, for those who are not aware, this is Cambridge versus Manchester United in the FA Cup Friday Night Football. I watched some of it. The camera angle was atrocious, to be honest with you. But anyway, it was at a small ground. All the money that was on the pitch for Manchester United versus
million.
What was on there for Cambridge goes the heart and determination.
And shows you that the FA Cup, they're giving it, throws up all of these, you know, these type of idiosyncrasies. And it was their heart and their passion to work so hard for each other, to run the legs of each other. Now, they go back and they'll go to Man United, they'll go to Old Trafford, and probably we'll see a different game. But for them, it's a hell of a payday.
And they were told not even
to give away their shirts, because they're told if they give away their shirts, they would have to buy them.
44 quid or something. 44. I don't think Man United fans would begrudge Cambridge their day.
Absolutely not.
As you say, they're likely going to progress.
Absolutely
Cambridge
not.
Get a big payday at Old Trafford. The sort of that whole, dream of the FA Cup.
Absolutely.
It's kept going. So.
I thought, and it's one of those good time stories where you like to see in football where the minnows beat the big ones, and 75 paces between them. And these guys, half of them, not even played. And one guy came on, a sub, Luke Chadwick, who paid for Man United, 34 years of age, and just wanted to run the legs off himself for the last 15 minutes just to prove a point. Yeah. I thought, fantastic. Well done, lads.
That's the great thing about sport, isn't it?
Isn't it fantastic?
Right, give us one more news story, Christy, if you don't mind.
Well, unfortunately, this is a kind of an anniversary, and it was the murder of Sergeant Adrian Donoghue in Lordship, and the hunt for killers for Adrian Donoghue is very much alive, as the force says it remains a top
priority.
Remind
us of the case, Christy.
Yeah, this is where Adrian Donoghue and his partner were at the Lordship Credit Union doing security, and they were waiting there at the time, a number of people from the South Armagh Cross McGlen area, well known to the Gardaí and the PSNI, were involved in the robbery, but they shot Adrian Donoghue really in cold blood. Now, that investigation ongoing, a number of those suspects now, some of them are living in Boston in America, and the main ringleader is back now from America and living back in Cross McGlen and Armagh, and there's still a dedicated team under under the direction of Kieran
Kelly. And just from your background in policing, before we talk about the point you wanted to make, without obviously compromising anything, you talk about how the Gardaí know, the PSNI know, the people involved. You talked about ringleaders. They know where they are in Boston, this, that and the other. Just from a policing perspective, why can't they be brought in and charged, or why can't that investigation be progressed, or why hasn't it to this point? Without going into any areas of libel or anything.
The huge tranche of evidence already been gained by the Gardaí and the PSNI in relation to these suspects. Some of them are even in prison abroad, believe it or not, and that's been reported in the paper. But the breakthrough really for them is that one of these suspects may come forward and make a statement.
State's evidence,
State's evidence, please. Or somebody close to that group may come forward and say, yes, I know about this, or we have evidence to suggest,
That is required.
That is required, yeah. But you need to back up and not have all the other evidence to support and back it up as well. These are not good people. These are real serious robbers. I mean, they're still involved in serious crime, and they're still involved and have been convicted of serious crimes. So please God for Adrian and his family and all his colleagues that this can come to an end, that somebody will be able to be brought to justice at the end of the day for this heinous murder.
It's very difficult for families.
And
the word closure is often overused, and I mean, there is an element of it, but you never get full closure, obviously, because you've lost someone you love so much. But I can imagine if there's this investigation, and we heard it earlier this week here in Donegal, the family's frustration at the Sean Duffy investigation seems to have been going nowhere 10 years on.
Yeah.
And now we have this Garda's family in the same situation. Yeah. It's very difficult. And they marked the anniversary, did they?
They did. And they had a vigil as well, and in Lordship as well, for Adrian and the family, just to highlight the fact that this case is ongoing and that they support the family, because he was a very popular guy involved in GAA.
And it was senseless.
It was a senseless murder.
On that note, a sad note, of course, but Christy Galligan, we're going to thank you for coming
in. Thank you so much.
It's always an absolute pleasure, and hopefully it's not too long before you're back in with us again.
Thanks very much.
Christy Galligan there, former Labour Party member. You're very welcome back. Joined in studio now by two guests on the programme. We're discussing the Cathedral Quarter Project in Letterkenny. First of all, Secretary of the Project, Donan Harvey. Very good morning to you.
Hello, Greg. Thanks very much.
Great to have you. And tell us about the Cathedral Quarter Project.
The Cathedral Quarter Project stemmed from a campaign that was set up on Facebook initially, and it was called Save the Church Lane. And the idea stemmed from, well, the original idea was of Jim Lynch's idea of a craft village in the centre of Letterkenny, mm-hmm. and then that this could develop into a cathedral quarter. And the cathedral quarter itself runs from, say, Gallagher's Hotel down as far as the Market Square, up past the Market Square, past St. Jude's Cathedral, up as far as Century Hill and St. Jude's College, then over to Ardodonnell, Lower Ardodonnell, and then eventually going down Spears Lane and finishing at Gallagher's Hotel.
And there was a sense that this area was being lost?
Yes, that a lot of the old buildings, especially on the Church Lane, that they were falling into disrepair. And I suppose the mentality during the Celtic Tiger area was that we lost a lot of our architectural heritage and was put up with something. Well, some of the development was great, good, but then there was other development that might have suited the area.
And we have that old town, new town thing as well going on.
Exactly, so. But at the same time as that, what we found is that in this area, this was the original heart of the town.
The historic heart, the epicentre.
The epicentre of Letterkenny. And a lot of the historic buildings are still in use today. But one of the other main things is that we've got a series of events associated with Irish history that should be celebrated. Mm. And that we would like to promote the area and promote it in terms of tourism and
we'll talk about that because that's going to the future. But just going back to when you talked about this being, starting on Facebook, it got a lot of interest, perhaps more interest than was expected.
It was the very first week. There was, when I initially set up the campaign, 1,000 likes within 4 days, and I suppose it did went on viral, and then I realised that this project got too big for one person. Yeah. So I rang a man by the name of Shane Tolan, who's in Ballyshannon, and Shane, along with others, helped to establish the Ballyshannon Museum and District. And Shane had links to Letterkenny, mm-hmm. and he thought it was a wonderful idea. And then he suggested that I call a public meeting. And then from that there, we got our board of directors, we got our committee elected. And then it's kind of snowballed from there that now we have become
big.
Yeah, it is.
And the name's great. You see, it's the Cathedral Quarter Project. It's catchy and it's to the point. And you mentioned, you did mention very well, but the area before, but you're going from street to street. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So this encompasses all of that. So up until now, what progress do you think has been made? Has it been mainly public relations? Has it been mainly sort of rallying the troops? Or?
Well, there has been because we're only a new group and we've no money, basically. Well, whatever money we do have, it's been raised by ourselves. But we found that it's, of course you need money, but it's more that you need drive and you need determination. Yeah. So what we've done is that we started doing activities that you need, that you don't really need a lot of money for. And then some of the activities that we did, initially, we cleaned up Greaves Field, and then along with the Letterkenny Tidy Towns, and then what other ones that we done then, that we, there was an iron grid on the entrance to that field. We worked along with Main Shed and the Letterkenny Town Council, and we got a wooden gate put into the place, into the entrance. And then there was another series that we had this initiative where we scraped off the old paint off the windowsills, and the Foley family, who owned Church Street Cycle, they sponsored paint for their own building. And then Foy's Interiors Decorated, they sponsored us paint. They helped choose out the colours. And then we worked on scraping off the paint and then giving the place
a facelift and tidy up. I suppose you can't try and promote something unless you show that you've got pride in it. And,
exactly.
As you talked about the work that's been done.
Yes.
That's stuff that can be done on an ongoing basis.
Yeah.
Now, where did the arts come into the, if you know what I mean? Or is this just part of this specific project upcoming?
Well, the arts came in saying that the idea that this street could become an artisan street, and that a lot of tourists flock up the street, because I live on the street myself, and I know a lot of tourists flock up the street, But a problem that we seem to hear having Letterkenny is that come after 6 o'clock, there's very little for tourists
Exactly. Bottom line is Letterkenny's a fantastic town. It's got as much entertainment and what have you as you like. But maybe for a cultural tourist or arts and crafty type tourist or someone that just wants a ramble. It's probably lacking a little bit in that regard.
Yes. Oh, of course, there's loads of facilities and whatnot in Letterkenny, but it's catering for a different sector, and especially you could maybe say like the continental sector, where as on the continent we have to move away from the mentality that not everybody wants to go to a pub like
I'm saying
that's more like a coffee continental culture as well.
And the area you're talking of lends itself very well to
that.
Now, Maria McCormack, a local singer-songwriter, are you a bit of a mercenary coming in, writing a song and performing it? Or is this, and I don't mean that with any disrespect, but is this something that's close to your heart as well?
Yeah, well, I'm just friends with a few members on the committee, one in particular, Amanda, and it was her idea. You know, that's what I do, I write songs. So she thought it would be a good idea maybe to try and write something about the Church Lane. So I ran with it, and I just tried to cover the fact that, you know, it is steeped in history, you know, the fact that it joins religions, you know, as well, and that it's the heart of the town. And then I originally had sang it at one of the fundraising nights in the green room, Mark Black and Friends. I was singing at that with my band, and that night then a few different people said, you know you're missing out a few things and that, so I had to add on another verse to it. You know, the song could go on and
so when you started when you started the songwriting process initially, and obviously you've developed it since then, did you sort of go to the area and speak to different people and
did a lot of research because it's written about a particular area, you can't just, you know, pull it out of your hat, you know. So we did do a lot of research. Amanda was fantastic, and Donnan. So it's kind of a collaboration with Amanda, and then also another member of my band, Paul McGill, you know, lent a lot of help as well, putting it together. So.
And you're going to sing that song for us, which I'm very excited about. But before we do that, Donnan, I want to ask you if there's anything you want to add, because this is, I want you to tell us when we're going to be able to hear this performance, and there's lots of different things happening. So give us, I want to give you an opportunity to plug all that, if that's okay.
Oh, well, great, because one of the things that we want to promote within the project, that it's not just the physical, it's not just the buildings. So it's, as I said, it's to do more so with promoting local talent. And again, we want to promote the area and promote the people from Letterkenny and the surrounding area at every opportunity, whether it be sport, music, arts and things like that there. And so, again, one of the fundraisers there, Maria mentioned it, was that the Mark Black and Friends, and Mark given a platform for all the great talent, musical talent there is here in the Northwest. And Mark and John Muldoon were very great in kind of getting a lineup together of the great talent that we have here in the county, and it's promoting that there.
Sounds really exciting. Is there a specific night, or is it over the course? Is there a series of events?
We've always got ongoing events, we try to at least have once a year. Now, the main one now, again, Amanda, give a lot of credit here to Amanda and to Mary Crawford and James Collin there, that they've organised now an exhibition that's going to be on the RCC on Thursday night. And the exhibition's called Imagine Your Cathedral Quarter. And so what it would be is, we want the community to have their say as in what they would like to see on the street or in the area as well in general. And it's a lot of people. We have a list of guest speaker, and then it's going to be open. The exhibition is going to be opened by our chairperson, Pat McGart, who was raised on the street. And then we have also got Councillor James Pat McDade from he's a cultural officer for the municipal authority. So he's going to give us a talk. And then our main speaker on the night is going to be local historian Niall McGinley, who's going to give some
fill in the blanks of the history
of the people that lived in the area. But also that there, we have a lot of entertainment. We've got Maria is going to be performing
with my band.
With her band.
Pangea.
Say that again, I had your
mic down.
I have
to put that in there. You know, the band is Pangea.
Okay.
And Sinead Galler is also another singer-songwriter from Letterkenny, who helped out in the volunteering and the cleaning up the field. She's also going to be singing along in the night. And we've also got comedians. So we've got Michael Leedy, Andy McGranahan, Padraig Geller, and Paul Boner as well.
And this is all on Thursday night.
This is all on Thursday night.
It's
going
to be a great night, isn't it?
So, and afterwards, if people can't make there on the night, there's also going to be a mood wall where we want people to put up what they would like to see in the area, but also to share their memories of the Church Lane and off the surrounding areas.
And let's
be
clear, it's not about if you are from the Cathedral Quarter, we'll call it, or if you have a direct connection to it. If you're from the Letterkenny and its surrounding areas, a rising tide lifts all boats.
Well, that adds
to the texture of the area for visitors.
Well, that's very much it, because one of the other concepts, especially for the people from Letterkenny, is not so much as one of the concepts that we want to develop, is very much about the local. And it's so much of that we want to get through that it doesn't matter where you're from, as in what your background mm-hmm. and your country is or your country of origin, but if you live in the town or you live in the local area, you've got a part to play and you're part of the community. And that's very much something that we want to develop, because one of the residents on the street is Siemek, who's a member of the Polish community, and he's going to be starting a Czech scheme office, and so he's going to be working on the street now within the forthcoming weeks. So that's what we want to get through, that message that it doesn't matter where you're from, if you're here, you've got a part to play.
Right, Don, and I've heard enough now. I want to hear Maria.
No problem.
No, I'm only joking. Maria, so do you want to set this song up for us? Are you happy that you've done that already, Maria?
Yeah, well, I just want to thank Tara McGinty and Bal Buffet and Valley Studios. He has very kindly spent so much time in recording this with me and adding on like different instruments and just put so much work into it. It's quite funny, when I did go up to initially record it, he said, "So what are we doing today, Maria?" And I said, "Recording a song for the Church Lane." And he said, "Oh," he says, "my uncle used to have a shop in the Church Lane." I was like, "Who's that?" And he says, "Tim Foley." And I says, "Well, he's one of the names in the song." So he was really happy then, you know, to put so much work into it. So I just want to particularly thank him. This is going to be available on the night, on the 29th for sale, and all the money is going towards the
brilliant track. And this is an acoustic version, obviously, you're doing for us now.
Yeah,
the single version is the studio version.
Studio version, exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Okay. Right, take it away when you're happy, Maria.
Okay, thank you. Carved from the stone, this lane was made. Vision, the city of God. The church was built 1636, says the deed upon the stone. Then the cathedral, thanks to O'Donnell and her friends over the sea. The Gospel Hall 1895, preaching to the whosoever. Did you ever take time? Did you ever take time to gaze from the foot of the Church Lane? This lane joins religion, this lane steeped in history, this lane set the heart of our town. Reverend O'Hanlon, he raised more money. Church Lane. This lane joins religion, this lane steeped in history, this lane sat the heart of our town. An institution, Tim Foley cycles much more than just a shop. Hugh Creer's boarded the first motor car, John driving school, and the evening press. Shem's horse saved goals in the millennium team. Dave's universal
Today we can see what letter Kenny can be, breathing new life back into the old. Rejuvenation through imagination, the dream has already begun. The lane's alive, its heart's beating again, community together as one. Here is our future, long were the past, the church lane granted a new life at last. Did you ever take time, did you ever take time to dander up the church lane? This lane joins religion, this lane steeped in history, this lane's at the heart of our time, the heart of our time.
Hey, that's fantastic. Maria McCormack, thank you so much for that.
Thank you, Greg.
It's not just looking backward, you know, it's...
Yeah, looking forward.
It's, you know, yesterday, today, forever sort of a situation, mm-hmm. isn't it? Is that what you wanted to achieve with it?
I wanted to cover, like, there's so many interesting things about the lane that I had never heard of, and it just blew me away, like old history. Then hearing the stories about the likes of Tim Foley and how John or Hugh Crearan had the first motor car, just different things that I thought were really interesting. But as well, you know, kind of what the Cathedral Quarter Committee is trying to achieve, and looking forward and with imagination, yeah. you know, what we can have hopefully in years to come.
So. Definitely. Maria Cormack, local singer-songwriter, penned that song herself, of course. It's going to be performed with your band as part of this great night on Thursday. Your band's name is?
Pangaea.
Pangaea. Mm-hmm. And Donan, that's us, I think.
Yeah, just before you go, you can follow, if you can't make the night, as I said, the mood wall will be there, and we're looking for people just to go down and visit the RCC, and they can put on their memories or what they would like to see on in the Cathedral Quarter. And you can follow that on our Facebook page as in Save the Church Lane, or on Twitter as at Save CH Lane. And then there's a couple of people I just want to thank. Just want to thank all the guest speakers, the entertainers, the RCC, Mary Fahanan, Alan McLaughlin, Max Mace, Brown Printers, Impacto Print, and yourselves for having us on the show.
Last, but not least.
Last but not least.
Maria McCormack and Donald Harvey, thank you so much for coming into studio.
Thank you, Greg.